So welcome everybody to this meditation retreat. 9 days. You don't need to be overly concerned, because the type of meditation which I teach is a very gentle, very peaceful, very inspiring and very effective way of calming the mind down. As we all know, that meditation is the heart of the Buddha's teachings. It is the way that Buddha himself became enlightened under the Bodhi tree. But many people don't understand that the meditation process itself is a very pleasurable process. As we ease our mind into the calm and stillness more and more, you find quite naturally the mind becomes brighter and happier, and you start to see things more clearly. For those of you who want a simile, one of the best similes which I have, just from ordinary experience, which I think you will find it very easy to relate to, is a simile concerning an experience at my monastery in Australia several years ago. But first of all, can everybody hear? If you can hear in the back, could you put your hands up? If you can hear in the back, please put your hand up. You can't hear. Okay. So can we have a bit more volume? They cannot hear in the back. So, please, up the volume. Hello. How's that? Is that any better? You can hear in the back now. What would have happened if, when the Buddha was alive, that people couldn't hear what he was saying? There will be no Buddhism left today. So it's important. Actually, the Buddha had a great advantage. He didn't have to use a microphone and PA systems. So I think that's okay. Again, once again, the people in the very back seats, can you hear? If you can, put your hand up. In the very back seats? Very good. If during any of these talks you find you can't hear, please gesticulate, stand up or say something. It's such a great shame that when the talk is being given, it's not heard simply because of a bad PA system. But I was just going back to a very evocative and meaningful simile about meditation, which some of you who have been to my retreats before would remember. But it's a great simile which shows what meditation is all about. Its effectiveness, the way to do it, and what happens when you meditate. For those of you who have visited me in Australia, you know my monastery is on top of a hill, and that road going up to the hill is about 2 kilometers long. Is it okay? No? Okay. Is that better? Is that still clear? Okay. So, back to my monastery on top of a hill. This is the third time, and usually we have to say things in 3 times in Buddhism to make them work. My monastery is on top of the hill, and you all know why we build monasteries in high places. Because it is the tradition. Holy people are supposed to stay on top of mountains. And I always thought that until some of my monks, especially some of the young monks, I've got a few monks, 20, 21 years of age, they told me that that's not true, because there's a person called Yoda from Star Wars, and he lives in a swamp, not in a mountain, not that I've ever seen that, but apparently they say that Yoda lives in a swamp, so he's the only exception of a holy man, only from Hollywood, who lives in a swamp. Most holy people live on top of mountains. So my monastery was built on top of a mountain simply because of tradition. Like Vinayakachitta's monastery, it's up a steep hill because that's where holy people are supposed to be. Now, it was for over 10 years that I went up and down that monastery in a vehicle. But one day, it was a beautiful spring day, I decided to walk up the hill going to my monastery. I had plenty of time. The weather was perfect. So I asked my driver, drop me off at the bottom of the hill. I'll walk up and I will see you later. So I began to walk up the hill to my monastery. And as I was walking up that hill, a strange thing happened. I could not recognize that hillside. It looked different to anything I'd ever seen before. And I began to wonder, why is it I'd been up and down that road for over 10 years, and now I cannot recognize those same surroundings? So I stopped and stared. And when I stopped, the scenery changed again. I started to see more detail, and what I saw was more rich in color. I started to see rocks which I'd never noticed before, trees and shrubs, which I never knew were there. And it was such a striking experience that I contemplated afterwards. Why was it I'd been up and down that hill, on that road, so many times, and now I was seeing it as if for the very first time? And having been brought up as a scientist, I soon realized that when you are looking through the window of a speeding car, your eyes simply do not have the time to register all the details. Just scientifically, the light reaching the back of your eye does not have sufficient time to form a chemical image on the retina before some other image interrupts it and you have to attend to something else. The experience, the data of our senses just rushes so quickly that no one thing can be fully appreciated. Even sound can't be fully heard before you have to attend to the next one. That was why I could not see that hillside that clearly. But when I stopped, or rather slowed down and walked, the light had more time to establish itself on my eye. I actually literally saw much more, and even the colours had a greater time to establish itself on my senses. They were more rich and full in intensity, and even the sounds, I started hearing more things, feeling more things, knowing more things. And when I stopped, it was only then that my senses had all the time in the world to see the beauty of that hillside. Only then could I see every blade of grass. Only then could the colours fully form. And so the greens were a rich green. The reds, the yellows, the browns, they were rich. And I realised from that experience just why a lot of people do not understand and appreciate life. Too often we're going so fast through our life that what we see, what we hear, what we feel has not got the time to be fully known. That we live life with washed out colours, with imperfect information. We never have time to fully appreciate what is happening. The job of meditation is the reason why I say this simile. The job of meditation is to change from being like someone who goes in a fast car through life, always never having time to appreciate anything, and experience life as a dull, washed out life with no happiness, with no verve, with no fullness. To change that by slowing down the mind, so that when we're not dealing with so many things, we can linger more on every experience. And you'll find as you slow down, as the mental processes stop from 100 kilometers an hour to 50 to 20 to 10 to 5 to 2, as we slow down, we tend to see much more. We feel more deeply. What we see is more rich and far more beautiful. The slower I went, the more beautiful that hillside became. And when I stopped, it was incredibly beautiful. You'll also find that the mind slows down. Not only do you see more, but what you see is more beautiful, more full of happiness. That is the nature of slowing down. So as our mind slows down, you can expect to be more alert, more mindful, seeing, feeling, hearing more deeply. And secondly, happiness starts to increase. It's these two things, the happiness and the mindfulness, the alertness, which is what keeps people meditating more and more. The happiness is called the energy of the mind. And anyone who comes here seeking that energy for the sake of overcoming illnesses and stress, that will certainly happen. But please, remember, your job is to slow down, to take things more slowly, more calmly, more peacefully. Sometimes when I say this, people think, oh, meditation must be so hard. Only when you don't understand meditation is it difficult. The truth of the matter is that meditation is the most easiest thing to do in the world. There's a simile which has two meanings. Many of you have seen me do this simile before. The first meaning is I hold a cup up and say, how heavy is it? And the point is, the longer I hold this cup like this, the heavier it appears. If I keep holding this cup for 5 minutes, my arm will start to become painful. If I keep holding this cup for an hour, I'd probably be in great pain. If I keep holding this cup for 3 hours, I will be a very stupid monk. And the question is, what should I do when this cup starts to get heavy? Put it down. And you don't have to throw it away. You put it down for a few seconds. And when you pick it up again, it feels lighter. It is the same weight, but because you've rested, you can carry it with no stress. Stress in our modern world has nothing to do with how many duties and responsibilities we have. Stress in this world only depends on our inability to put our duties down and to rest when they start to feel heavy. So the first thing in this meditation, you're going to learn to put your responsibilities, your duties, your worries, your craving, your attachments, put it down for a while and rest. And if you think those duties are really important, you can pick them up again later, but after you've rested. And that way, there's no such thing as stress for you. As soon as it becomes troublesome, as soon as it becomes heavy, you learn how to put it down. That's simile number one. Simile number two in meditation, and this is especially for those of you who've meditated before, or rather, who have tried to meditate before. If meditation is learning how to be calm, it's like learning how to make this water in this glass absolutely still. This is the first way that people try to meditate. They try and hold the glass still with willpower, with training, focusing their mind, trying to keep this glass still. I've been doing this for many years. I cannot make this glass still this way. It always is moving. This is how many people meditate. They always get frustrated. They cannot get their mind to be still. They're always thinking about something, worrying about something. But this is the wrong way to meditate. The Buddha pointed out, it's very easy to keep this water still. All you need to do is put it down. Now it's moving even more. But I'll just leave it down there for a few more seconds. I'll look at it again. Now it's very still. It's a little bit of movement. Another few seconds. And that water is now absolutely still. And it's so easy to do. All I need to do is to put it down and leave it alone. Don't interfere. In this simile, that's your mind. You're trying to keep it still. The more you try and hold it still, the more it's going to vibrate. Because as you hold it, it's called in Buddhism grasping, attachment, doing. And you never get things peaceful by that way. When you do something, when you grasp, you're interfering. Instead, you put it down. Leave it alone. When you first let go of your mind, you'll think that everything is going wrong, which is true. It moves more when I first put it down. But be patient and don't interfere with the process. As you put the mind down, you let go. Peace comes quite naturally. The point is, the reason why the mind isn't peaceful, the reason why it moves so fast so you can't see anything, is because we make it move. We're always going to some destination. In this meditation retreat, please remember this theme, meditating without any destination, not trying to get anywhere, not having a goal, not trying to achieve something. As my master Ajahn Chah often said, meditation is not about going anywhere. Meditation is about being more fully where you are. Being more fully where you are. Not trying to get somewhere else, but being here with more mindfulness, with more fullness, with more alertness. So if you try and get somewhere, you hold your mind, you try and move it. Being more fully here is putting this down and just watching, just being alert. To be here, to be fully here, the first thing we have to do, and I call this the basic method of meditation, is to find a place, a posture, where you can just sit comfortably. Many people ask me when you start meditating, how should you sit? What is the best posture? Should you be cross-legged? Should you be in the full lotus, the half lotus, the Burmese position? Or can you sit on these Zen stools? Can you sit on chairs? What is the most important posture? And the answer is, and this is from experience, there's only one thing you should pay attention to when you sit down to meditate. The most important part of your posture, which many of you don't pay attention to, is the corners of your mouth. Make sure they're going upwards. But you're smiling. Because if you aren't smiling, you're actually putting a lot of negativity into the mind. And when you put negativity into the mind, when there's no joy, you'll find you'll never be able to stop. You'll never be able to find peace. This is such a common teaching in our modern life. I remember that when I was at university, just because it was Cambridge, I decided to do a little bit of rowing. Never in the boat race, never got that far, but just for fun. And I remember on one race in the river, which is such a long race, and I was pulling the oar so hard, over halfway I got really tired, and it was just such a struggle to keep up with everybody else. And the coach on the bank with his megaphone shouted out to me, and he said, look, you're making a terrible expression on your face. He said, smile. And I had the courage or the faith to actually to do that, and I smiled as I was putting this oar. And of course, it worked. It's just basic psychology. As soon as I started smiling, it was much easier to pull the oar. The expression on your face affected your body and your mind and made the whole process more difficult. You find in life, whatever you have to do, if you just put a smile on your face, the mind brightens up, you have more mental energy, You're engaged with the task. You're not fighting the task, which means that you are more successful and more efficient. It's basic efficiency. Now that works in any sport, in any task, whatever you're doing. This is basic psychology of the mind. If you smile, everything becomes easier. Even if you're having an operation, or before you're having some procedure, even being injected, or it's painful, you put a smile on before the injection goes in, and it does not hurt that much. If you frown, it's very painful. It's amazing just what the mind adds on to the experiences of life. So, the main part of your posture, I don't care which leg is over what. I don't care whether the left hand's on the right hand or the right hand's onto the left hand. I don't care whether you're leaning to the left or the right and you're slumping or you're dead straight. I don't care whether you're sitting on a chair or sitting on the ground or sitting on broken glass. What is important is I'm going to look upon your facial features. And if you're not smiling, I realize you're not going to get a good meditation. Now you may not have heard that before. Try it and see. It is effective. If during the meditation nothing is working, leave your meditation object, go to the feelings around your mouth, smile, then go back to your mind and you find it's very easy. People make it hard in meditation. Meditation itself is very easy. Why are people grimacing? What are they trying to fight? Meditation is not a war. Meditation is making peace. Isn't a goal of meditation peacefulness, stillness, calm? Isn't the Buddha the most compassionate being? Why can't we meditate with a Buddha mind? A mind of compassion. And this is exactly what we do in meditation. In the most recent talk I gave last night in KL, rather than PJ, at the BGF, I made an important point about meditation. For those of you who meditated before, you may understand the way the Buddha described meditation was the task of overcoming the five hindrances so the mind is clear enough to see the Dhamma. The five hindrances, the first two are the most important. The first two are desire and ill will. Where does such desire and ill will lie? Those two lie in the space between you, the observer, and your meditation object. For those of you who are watching the breath, it doesn't really matter what the breath is doing. What is most important is your attitude towards your meditation object. It doesn't matter so much whether you're watching the breath. What's most important is how you are watching the breath. Are you watching the breath with ill will or with desire? If you are, you are feeding the hindrances. That's why it never works. No desire, no ill will in meditation. For those of you coming for this talk outside of meditation, of course we have to do things. Of course we have to desire, we have to fight injustice, whatever it is. But this is just in meditation, and for those people here for the next 9 days, no fighting. Don't fight this moment. Don't try for it to be different. Rather, we make peace with every moment. Whatever this moment is, we make peace with it. We put peace between this and what we're experiencing. If you go back to your room and someone's snoring, should you complain? Many years ago, when I was a young monk in Thailand, the first year in the northeast of Thailand with Ajahn Chah, the local villagers had just discovered electric generators and amplifiers. So when they had their parties, they put on this music, this terrible Thai music. I hated it. at such a loud volume. It was even painful to hear a kilometre away. I don't know what it was like right next to those speakers. It was so loud. Moreover, they kept this party going till just before 3 o'clock in the morning. So not only could we hardly meditate, we couldn't even sleep. And by the time they turned those generators off so they could have a rest, it was 3 o'clock in the morning, the time when the monastery bell went, when we had to get up anyway. So we weren't getting any sleep at all. So we complained to the head man of the village, "Hey, you're supposed to be supporting us monks. Now can't you at least turn it down at 12 o'clock and let us have some rest?" But even though they were Buddhists, the party was more important. They wouldn't listen to us. So we thought, well, they won't listen to us, but surely they would listen to our master, Ajahn Chah. So we wanted Ajahn Chah to intervene for us. So we asked him, "Can you tell these villagers to follow the middle way? Not so loud. Turn it off later, maybe 12 o'clock. At least give us a couple of hours sleep. It's disturbing us." And at that, Ajahn Chah replied in this very pithy and wise statement, which could have come from the Buddha. He said, "Monks, it's not the noise disturbing you. It's you disturbing the noise." And then he sent us away. Now that is such an amazing insight. It's never the noise disturbing you. It's you disturbing the noise. You making war with the noise. So tonight, if anybody snores in your dormitory, don't disturb the snore. It's not the snore disturbing you, it's you disturbing the snore. If you can understand that, you know how to meditate. How to make peace. You can't expect to find a perfect meditation center. We're building a meditation center in Perth. We had all these great ideas of having personal air conditioners right over you. So every person, if you like it hot, you can have it hot. If you like it cold, you can have it cold. So you can have a remote control. Your own little zone of air conditioning. You can have it absolutely quiet. So we can get some electronic gizmos which interfere with anybody's noise. So you're absolutely quiet. You can do all sorts of things. We can get you your personal butler to come to your room to give you the menu. What do you like for breakfast tomorrow morning, sir? What can we get you for lunch, madam? We can make this meditation retreat center just not 5 class, but 8 class. Every 8 star rather. 1 star for every factor of the Eightfold Path. But the point is, no matter how perfect you think it is, it will never be absolutely perfect. There'll be always something wrong. Somebody will cough just when you're about to get into jhana. The point is that is life. Even if you do manage to get the perfect meditation center, you'll never get a perfect body. You'll always have a cough or an itch or something happens. So the only way we can become at peace is to understand it's not the noise disturbs us, it's we disturb the noise. If you become sleepy, it's not the sleepiness which disturbs you, it's you disturb the sloth and torpor. It's not the restlessness which disturbs you, you disturb your restlessness. It's not even the pain in the body disturbs you, you disturb the pain in the body. Now do you understand what letting go is all about? Stop disturbing things. Stop interfering. It's interesting when people say watch their breath as a meditation object. How many times that you notice as soon as you watch your breath, the breath becomes uncomfortable? Before you are breathing in and out without any problem whatsoever, it's just so comfortable you don't even notice it. But as soon as you watch your breath, it's either too long or too short or too deep, it's too rough. Why? The reason is because as soon as we watch something, then we interfere with it. As soon as you start meditating, you interfere with the process of meditation. You are like the backseat driver. The Buddha is driving your car of meditation. He's in control of the vehicle. But you keep interfering. Come on, go quicker. Come on, go deeper. This is not my first retreat. I've been meditating a long time now. Nothing's happening. Come on, go quicker. You're interfering with the process. Leave it alone. Don't be a backseat driver of the meditation. Your job is just to guard the process without interfering with it. As soon as I put the cup down, I've finished my job. All I need to do now is to allow stillness to grow and grow and grow. So, it's not the noise, the restlessness, the sloth and torpor which disturbs you. You disturb the sloth and torpor. So leave it alone. When you do this beautiful path of meditation, of suppressing the five hindrances, especially desire and aversion, by making peace with every moment. When you make peace with every moment, when you're content, this is good enough, you will find that the first stage of meditation happens naturally and easily. We call it present moment awareness. Why is it that people just can't stay in the moment? Because you don't like being here, that's why. Too often that people are running away from the present moment. So many people are workaholics because they're afraid to stop. Too many people actually take alcohol and drugs because they're afraid to be here. So many people have their distractions, whether it's TV, movies, music or internal fantasies, simply because they're afraid just to be here. To be in the present moment, to be alive now, here. It's only because of desire and ill will that people are always on the run, fugitives from the moment. After a while, when we stop running here, we stop running there, we come to this beautiful place we call the present moment now, and we don't interfere with it, we embrace it, we accept it. It's called unconditional mindfulness. It's a new term you may have heard before, unconditional loving kindness, but this is unconditional mindfulness. What does unconditional mindfulness mean? It means I'm going to be aware of this no matter what it is. I'm going to be aware of this moment without any judgment, without any comparisons, without saying this is good, this is bad, I should be like this, I shouldn't be like that. In the same way we have unconditional loving kindness in Buddhism, where whoever you are, whatever you're doing, the door of my heart is open to you. That's called unconditional loving kindness. Many of you have heard that before, but this is unconditional mindfulness. Mindfulness without any conditions whatsoever. So you're aware of this moment unconditionally, whatever it is. So be careful. If you are sleepy, unconditional mindfulness. Be aware of that and allow it to be. Stop fighting it. If you say, I shouldn't be sleepy, that's not unconditional anymore. That's hating your sleepiness. If your mind is restless, unconditional mindfulness. You just allow your mind to be restless. Leave it alone. Stop fighting it. It's not the restless mind disturbs you. You disturb the restless mind, as Ajahn Chah would have said. Unconditional mindfulness. Just watch it. With the unconditional mindfulness, it's like putting it down. Stop controlling things. When you stop controlling things, the present moment becomes very clear. Simply because you're letting go You're not fighting, you're making peace with this moment, then you come to join the moment. When you're making war, the moment is an enemy. It will never come close to you. When you allow this moment to be, with unconditional awareness, you find you come into this present moment. Just that much. Present moment awareness is a great state to be in meditation. Most of people's troubles and concerns are to do with the past or the future. Imagine that you've given up all of the past and all the future for 9 days. You don't have to worry about what's going to happen next. You're not concerned about the journey you've come on so far. All you have is this moment, just now. It's like letting go of huge amounts of burdens. It's called the first stage of freedom. You're free of guilt. You're free of all those terrible things you may have done. You're free of fear for the future, free of worry. It's like really going on holiday. That freedom from the past and the future is the first stage of freedom, of going on a holiday. I use that word holiday deliberately. It's like being on vacation from your worries, which is why on all the retreats which I give a new name to the retreat center, and I call it this place here, Club Med Ippo. This is now christened Club Med Ippo. Club Meditation Ippo. Not Mediterranean, meditation. And I mean that because if we call it Club Med, it's a place of vacation, a place of freedom, a place of peace, a place of happiness, where you can have a vacation from the worries and the troubles of your life. You're free of the past and the future. This is what a holiday is supposed to be. So congratulations, all of you people who've got on this retreat. Welcome to Club Med. We're going to have a great time. When you're in the present moment, it is a great time because you're free. You can relax. You can get rid of all the burdens. Meditation is not some more stress which you have to add to your life. You've got enough of that already. This is freedom from stress. So, first stage is present moment awareness, just being here. And the only way you can do that is to have unconditional awareness of this moment. If you're fighting, you're always expecting something else. You're always going somewhere else. Always never being here. Always waiting for the next moment for your enlightenment. I think it should be very clear to you now that Nibbana is right here in this moment. Only we never stay long enough in this moment to really uncover it. All insight is never in the next moment, it's right now. Insight is just like this jewel which is wrapped in so many layers of cloth. We only see the outermost layer, and that's called now. To uncover that jewel, you just have to stay still in this moment, long enough for the present moment to unfold. Meditation is not trying to get somewhere. Meditation is trying to be more fully alert to what's happening now, because there you'll find the truth. Present moment awareness also gives you a great sense of happiness, simply because so much trouble and suffering has been let go of. The Buddha, or not the Buddha, this is Ajahn Chah's simile. He said it's like a man, a young man. When he was born, he had these two demons tie a rope around his neck and pull either end. So this poor young man was choking these two demons. You can imagine a string going around my neck and an invisible demon on the left, an invisible demon on the right, pulling this rope so tight you could hardly breathe. And that rope has been tightened ever since you were born throughout your whole life. The demon on the left is called the past. The demon on the right is called the future. And they've been strangling you all your life. Now here, the first stage of the meditation, you see those two demons and you get them to let go of the rope. So you're not burdened with the past and the future. You're not strangled by them. in this meditation, all you have is now, just this moment. So because of that, in this meditation retreat, stop looking at the clock. I can see a clock in front of me. I will tell you the time. The present time is now, minutes to now, on the now day of the now month, 2000 and now. That's the time, now. So what that means is we're going to keep no bell silence on this retreat. And those of you who have heard me say this before know what I'm talking about. You know what no bell silence means? We don't have any bells. No bell silence. Isn't it wonderful to throw away the clock? Maybe for the first couple of days you can look at the clock, but later on, when you want to meditate, meditate. When you want to sit, sit. When you want to walk, walk. When you want to sleep, sleep. At any time. I've tried these retreats in many different ways. The first times we had strict schedules. 4 o'clock you get up. 4:10 you have to be in the hall. 50 minutes sitting. 10 minutes walking. 50 minutes sitting. 10 minutes walking. Just like a military camp. What it meant was by the time you finished at 9 o'clock or 9:30, everybody went straight to their rooms and they crashed out. And they were very, very tense. They never got much out of that meditation retreat. However, these days, I say, it doesn't matter. Whatever time you want to go to sleep, go to sleep. Whatever time you want to meditate, meditate. And on the retreats which I've held, especially in Perth, people meditate at all hours of the night. There's always somebody in the room meditating. I'm really impressed. They hardly sleep at all. I say, why? So they don't feel like sleeping, they say. When you can sleep at any time, you're not afraid to carry on meditating when it starts feeling good. So this evening, tomorrow, the next day, maybe this evening, you're just fresh, take a rest. But later on, if your meditation is peaceful, if it's going well, carry on. Don't worry about the time. You can always sleep tomorrow sometime, at any time. Never get tense. Many of you come here with sleep deficit because you've been going so hard. You need a bit of a rest. The first few days I don't expect anything from you. Just present moment awareness, that's enough. Just being here. Don't try and get anywhere. Don't try and push anything. I mention this because so often I've taught meditation to these high executives. There was this one lady in particular I remember teaching meditation to in a retreat in Sydney. She came from this very high-flying job, had to sort of rush to get all her business sort of in order, and just rushed to the retreat centre, came in late. And when I told her, I realised straight away what was going on. I said, "Madam, I'm going to give you a special type of meditation object for the first few days. It's called meditating flat out." You know what meditating flat out means? Flat out on your bed, take a rest. And to her credit, and I praise her for this, she had the confidence and faith in me to follow my instructions. So for the first few days, she wouldn't get up for the morning meetings or chanting. She'd get up for breakfast. She'd eat her breakfast and then go back to bed again. And then get up for lunch. And she said all the other ladies in the dormitory were just so jealous of her. They wanted to do that, but they never had the guts and courage to do it. So for the first 2 or 3 days, she mostly slept. She's a great case in point, because she had sleep deficit. The next 3 days of the retreat, she soon caught up with what other people were doing, because she was so relaxed. She was so at ease. Her body was rested, her mind was relaxed, and she soon got into the meditation. By the end of the retreat, she was way ahead of the others in the depth of her meditation. She was wise. She didn't fight her body. She worked with her body. She made peace with it. And I mention that to you because some of you might be like that. I've done that myself for my body. And you may all know the Buddha fought for 6 years before he sat under the Bodhi tree. What a big mistake that was. as Wei said the middle way afterwards. So for the first few days, don't push so hard. Relax. Allow the meditation to start working. Present moment awareness. The second stage of the meditation is simply silence. To be fully aware, you can't be speaking at the same time. There's an old story that I went past the kitchen of my monastery in Australia some years ago. There were six Thai girls in there cooking a monk's lunch. When I looked through the window, I saw those six women all talking. Their mouths were open at the same time. And because I was a scientist, I looked in there. There are only six people in there, no seventh. And I thought, if six people are talking, I wonder who can be listening. And I realized no one was listening. Just everyone was talking. You ever seen that in a family? Six people talking and no one listening. You cannot be talking and listening at the same time. To be mindful, you have to listen. Total listening. This means you have to be silent. The silent mind, which doesn't give anything a name, but which knows it. Another great simile of that, the old tale of the Taoist master Lao Tzu, who would go on a walk every evening and would allow one of his students, only one, to come on a walk, as long as that student promised to keep the golden rule of not talking while on a walk with the master. On one occasion, there was a new student. He got permission to walk with the great master. They came to a ridge in the mountains at sunset. It was a gorgeous sunset. And the student couldn't help himself but saying, "Wow, look at that beautiful sunset." He'd broken the golden rule. And at that, the great master turned around and would never allow that student to go on a walk with him ever again. And the other student said, "Why? Why are you being so strict?" The master said, "When that student said, 'What a beautiful sunset,' he was not looking at the sunset anymore. He was only looking at the words. He wasn't looking at the sunset. He was just looking at the words." There's a huge difference between seeing the sunset and seeing the words, in knowing and labeling. The label is in the experience, no more than a menu is the food, no more than the signpost is the destination. After a while, allow all the movement of the mind called thinking and labeling to disappear. To all one has got is silent knowing. To be able to do that, you just have to be peaceful. There's no need to label, just to know. Little by little, by making present moment awareness and silence, you're establishing this mindfulness, this unconditioned mindfulness. In fact, as I will tell later on, tomorrow, that will be enough to take you all the way into the jhanas. Sometimes it's good to take an object like the breath, but it's not all that necessary. As you let go, as you become more peaceful, as your mind becomes naturally still like this glass of water, you're just following an ancient process, an ancient road. Because of stillness, because the mind doesn't move, you start to see more and more, just like the hillside in my monastery, more and more of the details and the beauty start to reveal itself. The insight comes with the joy, all based on the stillness. But in this case, you're not walking up the hillside, you're walking into the nature of your mind. You start to see who you are with all the details, and with all the beauty as well. That's why this meditation, once it starts to take off, will give you more happiness, peace, joy, insight than you ever had before. Don't think this is going to be a tough meditation retreat. This is going to be a blissful one. The meditation retreats which I give, at the end, people don't want to leave. That's why I say it's the best time to take a photograph of the retreatants. It's not at the end, because at the end of my retreats, when you take a photograph of all the retreatants, they all look sad. because they're going home. I don't want to go home. If you don't want to go home, then it's been a good retreat. Okay, so I've given you a little bit of instructions and also a little bit of understanding of what meditation truly is and how this incredible peace, incredible happiness and powerful insights and wisdom. In particular, keep focusing on that word of Ajahn Chah. It's not the sound which disturbs you. It's not life which disturbs you. It's you which disturb life. So stop disturbing things. Okay? Right, it's just gone past, now minutes past now. So we have time for some Q&A. Apparently we've got to shut up the temple at 10 o'clock, so we have to finish this after 9:30. Anyone got any questions about what I've just been talking about? Who's going to ask the first question? Do I have to tell that story again about karma and rebirth? Where the Buddha actually, this is in the Mahakama Vibhanga Sutta, where the Buddha gave all the different reasons why, say, some people are born beautiful in the next life, why other people are born ugly, why some people are born into rich families while other people will be reborn into poverty. What's the karmic causes for this? And in particular, the Buddha taught the karmic reasons why some people will be reborn in your next life as intelligent people while other people will be stupid. And the karmic reason why people will be reborn stupid in their next life, the Buddha said quite clearly, is because they do not ask questions in this life. So, has anyone got any questions? Don't say you didn't have a chance. You may have to work so hard at school, but you won't get your A levels or your degrees next time if you don't ask questions in this life. Any questions about the meditation? Can we get the... Yes, thank you. Intelligent person, next slide. Okay, you're actually saying that I'm saying not to fight, but sometimes people are lazy. And how do you get that mental discipline without fighting? As many of you know, there is a great story in the Chinese Art of War where one of the Chinese generals had the best discipline in the whole imperial army, and the emperor wanted to find out what his secret was. So he asked the general, "What is the secret of your perfect discipline?" And the general replied immediately, "The reason why my soldiers always follow my orders is because I only tell them what they want to do. That's why they always follow my orders." Now, of course, those simple statements are very profound. How can the soldiers want to get up early in the morning? How can they want to train so hard? How can they want to go into battle knowing that many of them will be wounded, even killed? It's called motivation. We don't motivate out of fear. We motivate out of something else. The carrot is always more important, more effective than the stick. So our motivation will be happiness, simple joy. That is what stops us being lazy. A lot of times laziness, again, is just built of fear. We're running away. And instead we inspire ourselves. Instead actually of being lazy, how about being here? If you go to Club Med, you want to go into all of the events. You want to go to the discos. You want to have all the meals. You want to have all of the swimming instructions or whatever else. Why is that? It's because it's entertaining. A case in point is this. In our monasteries in the northeast of Thailand, we had to stay up once a week without sleeping, meditating all through the night. The first few times I did this, when you get to about 2-3 o'clock in the morning, you start to get very tired and very sleepy. And I wanted to find out why that was, because I remembered about a year beforehand, before I became a monk, I used to go to all these all-night parties, all-night rock concerts in London. And you know, whenever I was listening to The Doors all night, there was that rock band, The Doors, and some of you may remember them. When I was listening to these bands all night, never once did I get tired or feel sleepy. But now I was meditating, I felt very sleepy. What was the difference? It was nothing to do with the hour at night when I was up. It was everything to do with whether I was enjoying myself or not. If it's something you enjoy, you're not lazy anymore. If you make meditation enjoyable, you give it a meaning, laziness doesn't come into the picture. It's the same with your kids when you get them to study or to work. And I know this because I was a school teacher for 1 year before I became a monk. And I was told in educational psychology, if you can make the lessons fun and engaging, people don't get bored. The kids like to work. So how many people become, say, engineers because they had a good science teacher? They become mathematicians simply because they like their math teacher. It's just motivation is all it needs. And then you're not lazy anymore. And that was a great secret of the general. He knew how to motivate his soldiers. So when it came time for them to get up, they just wanted to get up early in the morning. They wanted to fight because they were motivated by patriotism or by whatever. So when he gave the orders, the soldiers just did what they wanted to do. So the way out of laziness is motivation, not force. You may try and force your children to study hard. Does it work? All the shouting doesn't work, but if you motivate them, it does work. This is actually a true story in Perth. One of the disciples there, I think he was from Malacca, moved to Perth. His son was at university, but he was staying out too late with his girlfriend. So his grades started to go down. And the father kept on scolding him, look, you've got to... I don't mind you going out at night, but at least do your work first of all. Get your assignments in on time. You're not doing well. But it never worked. No matter what the father said, you know, the son would just be surly, yes father, but just nothing was improving. So he decided a different approach, a different form of motivation. He said he waited up late one night for his son to come back with his girlfriend. He was standing there when the car came in, and the two of them saw him and got terribly scared. What is my father going to do? He called both of them into the front room of the house. And he never talked to his son, he just started talking to his girlfriend. He just said things like, I've seen you going out for quite a long time now. I don't know what your relationship is, but you know, it may happen that one day that you may propose, you may get married. I'm just saying this to you because would you like to marry someone who's got no degree, no prospects? She said, oh, no. Now I want a sort of, a husband who's got his degree, who's got a good job, who's, is doing well in life. He said, well, I've got to tell you that, your boyfriend, my son, he's staying out so late, his grades are going well down. I didn't know that, she said. Is that true? And once the father employed the girlfriend on his side, then I think it's still happening now that every time they go out, if the girlfriend says, you've got to go back now, you've got to go to university tomorrow, and this poor young boy, he won't listen to what his father says, but he sure listens to what his girlfriend says. That's called motivation. That's smart psychology. So to motivate yourself, use encouragement, not fear. And then laziness doesn't come into it. Wisdom. And this is actually how I get more people to meditate. They don't meditate because they think they have to. They meditate because they like to. You're not lazy. No more than you're lazy if there's a soccer match on tonight. Oh, I'm too lazy to watch. No, I've got to watch it. My goodness, it's a cup final, or it's Malaysia, Ipoh are playing KL in the final of whatever cup it is. Wow, you've got to watch this. When is enjoyment there? You don't have to motivate yourself. So when I was a school teacher, I tried to make the lessons fun, and everyone paid attention. You didn't need to force the kids. When you meditate, you make the meditation fun. You don't need to force yourself, you just want to. Which is why the way I teach meditation, it comes to lights out time, there's always somebody meditating. You don't force them, they just want to. You can't stop them. Good on them. That's a way to overcome laziness. That's the same in your work. If you've got any workers working with you, I told us in Singapore, and I was told that quite a couple of bosses, there's one big boss there, and he came away afterwards nodding, yeah, now I see my mistakes. Because he tried to force his workers to work hard. And they would work hard when he was there. But when he left, they were slacking off. The boss is gone now. It's okay. His company wasn't doing good. Because you have to motivate, you know, even your workers to want to work for you, to do the right thing. If you can motivate your workers, you'll have a successful company. They won't be lazy because they're enjoying it, it's in their interest, they're getting something out of it. So you have to tell the workers who work under you what they want to do. You've got to get in there first of all, motivate them, brainwash them if you like. They want to work harder for you. And then they will. Forcing them, shouting them never works. Well, thank you for that question. Any other questions? You've only got one intelligent person. Yes, from the back. Yeah. Thank you. Yes? It's a meritorious deed, absolutely. Because what is merit? Merit? A long time ago someone said any step which is towards nirvana, towards ultimate happiness, is called merit, good karma. So meditation, said by the Buddha, is if you do it properly, it's huge good karma. Meditate for longer hours. It doesn't matter whether you meditate for longer hours or you meditate for short hours. It's why you're doing it. The quality of it is most important. Because there's a saying about Ajahn Chah, if it really depended on how many hours you sat still, if that was really important to becoming enlightened or not, he said that all the chickens in the world would be arahats, fully enlightened by now, because they sit for hours on their eggs without moving. So it's nothing to do. It's nothing to do with how long you sit. It's actually what you're doing when you're sitting. Okay, yeah. You're saying if you meditate for 1 hour, your legs are numb, you want to go on for another hour, is that desire? Quite often it is. Because very often you say, what are you doing that for? What's the purpose of this? What are you trying to prove? Are you trying to get something out of this? If you just want to be more mindful, just being at peace with where you are, making peace, unconditional mindfulness, then you may notice that now the legs are numb, that's okay, there's nothing wrong with that. You're at peace with it. The point is, I haven't fully developed what happens when you are fully at peace with unconditional awareness. This will come in tomorrow's night's talk, Superpower Mindfulness. But I'll give you a taste, because what happens if you're at peace with this moment, the whole idea of time disappears. And I'm sure that many of you got into that meditation where you don't know 5 minutes, 10 hours, it's the same. It's only just one moment long, the moment now. And you get into timelessness, you don't know what time has gone past, you don't care. You're perfectly alert, perfectly aware, but in a timeless space where you're not counting the minutes or the seconds or the hours. And that way you just meditate as long as the body and mind are peaceful. When it's time to come out, you just come out. You don't even look at the clock. You don't even care. In my first few years as a monk, didn't have a clock. Didn't know what time it was. You just saw when the sun came up or when the bells went to the monastery, you know, it's 3 o'clock or time to eat. But it got so wonderful that not only did I not know what day of the week it was, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, at one particular point I didn't know what year it was. Because I was in a timeless realm. Not alone know what month it was, I didn't know what year it was. Wasn't it beautiful to go into timelessness? So it doesn't really matter about the length of time. Don't be a prisoner of time. Just completely abandon all perception of time. There's only one moment long. And as long as the mind is peaceful and happy, it will stay there. When it's time to get out, you just come out, and that's all. Okay, makes sense? Many of you, when you meditate like this, you get these amazing experiences. Your body disappears, and you get into timelessness, and just sitting there. It's great when that happens, because sometimes these new meditators, these Westerners, Caucasians, never meditated before. Sometimes, oh, I can't meditate more than half an hour. I don't matter about it. Just watch. And they come out, I tell Bob, I just meditated for 3 hours. And it just happens, that's all. They just go into peaceful states and say, wow, I meditated all morning. It's incredible. It just happens. When you get peaceful, time has no meaning, and 2 or 3 hours, 4 hours, you beat all your records, and it is so easy. You're having fun. And number two, an interesting part of this is when you get into those very peaceful meditations, which last for many hours, you don't have any aches and pains. Legs don't feel numb. You just get up afterwards, and wow, you sat so long, so still. There's not an ache and pain or pain in the body. In fact, you feel so energized. This is the result of meditation. So don't worry about time. The structure of the retreat, if you look at the retreat schedule, is very loose. So you don't have to meditate for 1 hour, or half an hour, or 5 minutes, or 2 hours. You sit there on your seat. You close your eyes, you go into the present moment, into silence. Watch the breath if you like. And don't count the minutes. When the meditation is finished, when it's time to get up, you just get up, that's all. You do some walking meditation, or go and have a rest, have a cup of tea, whatever it is. So don't worry about time. Any other questions anyone has? Yes. Mental gossip. How do you deal with mental gossip when it happens? Make peace with it. Unconditional mindfulness. Because what happens, I've told this story many times recently. In my 6th year as a monk, I found this wonderful monastery up in the north of Thailand. It was cool, great food, so peaceful. And the lay community there didn't bother you at all. All they wanted to do was for me to go an alms round every morning. They fill my bowl full of delicious food. I give them a blessing. I wouldn't see them for the rest of the day. So it was perfect for meditation. I had all the time by myself. No duties, no other monks in this monastery. Complete solitude, perfect support. This was it. So I was meditating very diligently all day. Wait late into the night. It's a beautiful cave. You know, after lunch I'd go in there for 3 or 4 hours to meditate and only come out afterwards when it got cooler. It was absolutely perfect. The first 3 or 4 weeks my meditation went very well. But then it hit a brick wall. And I started getting restless. Like your mental gossip. And I really tried hard to stop that. Now, because I really wanted to, I was really trying hard to meditate and get into deep meditation, get some great insights coming. It was such a perfect opportunity. But the more I tried, the more my mind started getting restless. And it got to a point where it started thinking what I've termed unmonkish thoughts. And you can work out for yourself what unmonkish thoughts are. And that really sort of started getting me scared, and I tried even harder to suppress those thoughts. But they got worse and worse. And it got to a point, I was going almost crazy. And there was no other monk to talk to get advice. And so out of desperation, one day I went to the main hall. It's only like a small wooden hall. It had a beautiful Buddha statue in there. I bowed to that Buddha statue and asked for help. And I got an inspiration. Maybe it was just because I was a Westerner. I said, we'll make a deal. You can think whatever you like, mind, anything goes, sex, romance, whatever you want to call it, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. every day. But for the rest of the day, you behave yourself and watch the breath. That was the deal. I thought that was fair enough. Now, if the mind wanted to think about unmonkish thoughts, okay, we'll give you that space, 3 to 4 p.m. every day. You can think like that. The rest of the time, you behave yourself. Well, I tried that, but what actually happened was quite strange. The mind still wouldn't come into order. Even though I said, later on you can think about those things, it wanted to think about them now. So I was still watching the breath and the thought would come in, stop it, go back to the breath, start thinking about your ex-girlfriend, stop, come back to the breath. All these things came up. And it was just so hard and so frustrating. So when it came to 3 o'clock, I had to keep the other part of the deal. I went up to my hut, leant against the wall, pulled my feet out because I was tired, and said, okay, mind, whatever you want to think, anything goes. And for the next hour, it was so peaceful, just my mind watched the breath without any problem whatsoever. No restlessness at all. And I learned from that experience what caused the restlessness. I was making war with the gossip in my mind. I was actually feeding the restlessness. When you make war, you'll never find peace in any country. All you'll find is more disturbance, more and more disturbance. To settle my mind, I just said, okay, mind, if you want to watch, think about girls, go for it. It's all right. I'd actually made peace with whatever the mind wanted to do. Because I made peace, I had peace. It was just a peaceful experience. I would learn what letting go was from that experience. So you try that. Whatever the object of your mind, the gossipy mind, ask, why is it going that way? Why are you gossiping? What are you trying to run away from? It's because there's no peace there, no happiness there, that you fill in the void with old gossip, fantasies, thoughts, whatever. That's why we think. Discontent. So here we make peace with our mind. So if you want to think, that's alright. When I put peace between me, the observer, and that gossipy mind, I put peace there, not ill will, not sort of fear, not sort of embarrassment, just plain old peace. It unwinds, it stops within a few seconds. You try the other way, try and control your restless mind, and you'll be trying that for the rest of your life. You'll never succeed. But you let go, and the mind stops. So it's the relation, the hindrances, the problems of meditation lie between you and that restlessness. So don't disturb the gossipy mind. It's not the gossipy mind disturbing you. You're disturbing it. So leave it alone. Make peace with it. And then it just disappears. Very quickly too. If it doesn't disappear, and it keeps on going on, it means you're not making peace with it. You're indulging in it. You want it to keep on going. You want it, desire. If it's real peace, not ill will, but peace, it just finishes, it stops. There's nothing to keep it going anymore. The fuel source has been taken away. But please understand that, because so often people have, when they first start meditating, they still try and control their mind, try and stop it thinking, it doesn't work, and they think they can't meditate. You can meditate, just doing it the wrong way. Make peace with it. And then you find you get so peaceful, it's so easy to do. If you're going to find peace, you have to make peace. Like if you build a house like this temple here is built of many bricks or many breeze blocks. The house of peace is built by many bricks of peace. And every brick is made in this moment. If you make peace with this moment, make peace with the next moment, make peace with the moment after that, never fighting, making peace with it, after a while you've got so much peace, you've got this beautiful house of peace called deep meditation. So please make peace in every moment. And you'll find it's by far the most effective, fast way to get this incredible state of peacefulness in your mind. Where did it come from? Because you made peace. It's obvious. The restless mind is a result of old karma. It's there, you can't do much about it. It's already here. It's old karma. But don't make more bad karma with it by trying to get rid of it. Make peace with it. Make peace with it. You make it such good karma by making peace, by being like a Buddha, compassionate, kind, accepting, tolerant. That good karma will mean you feel peace in a few moments, not the restlessness anymore. That's how it works. Any other question? Last question, then we finish off for the night. Yes. Okay, you're asking, what is the most suitable type of meditation? To give you your answer in brief and most profoundly, they're all the same type of meditation. Exactly the same. It's all suppressing the five hindrances, letting go. However, just for the sake of psychology, sometimes if people can't do breath meditation in Perth, and they come out to me and say, I can't watch the breath, I said, okay, I'll teach you Anapanasati instead. And you all know it's exactly the same, just a different name. So people say, I can't do breath meditation. Oh, let's do Anapanasati. Okay, what's that? The point is that we're just tricking people using psychology. Try a different method. It's actually every type of meditation is the same. That's the basic truth of it. The mind becomes still, peaceful, happy. You see things as they truly are. You pass through the samatha, they dance around each other. You can't separate them. This is what Ajahn Chah would often say. He said, look at my hand. You can see the front part of my hand now, but I assure you the back part of the hand is right behind it. Now you see the back of my hand, but I assure you, everybody, the front is still there as well. The back of the hand is like vipassana. The front is samatha. You might see one thing. Okay, I'm teaching samatha now, but vipassana is right behind. Okay, I'm teaching vipassana now. But samatha is right behind. You can't see it, but it's right there. Once you understand this, samatha and vipassana, they work together. Once upon a time, Mr. Samatha and his wife, Mrs. Vipassana, decided to go on a walk. They decided to go up this beautiful hill just outside of Ipoh. Mr. Samatha wanted to go up that hill because he heard how peaceful and serene it was on top of that hill. Mrs. Vipassana heard that on top of that hill you get a wonderful view over the city of Ipoh and all the surrounds. She wanted to go up there for the view. So there Mr. Samatha and Mrs. Vipassana, they went up the mountain. One went up there for the serenity, the other one went up there for the view. However, when they both got to the top, Mr. Samatha, who went up there for the serenity, he realized how peaceful this was. But he also got this wonderful sight of the view of the surrounds. Mrs. Vipassana, who went up there for the view, oh, she saw this amazing view, but she also appreciated the serenity up there. Because on top of the mountain of meditation, there is both the beautiful sight, the wonderful view, the insight. There's also the serenity up there, because the two are just inseparable on top of the mountain. Which is why, if someone says they're doing Vipassana meditation, they say, great, go, please do. If they do Samatha meditation, they say, great, go, please do. Because I know they're actually doing the same thing. Different names, but the same thing. Just like when I was a student, I got a job at the local post office, and they got me sorting the mail, and in this London post office, they had this post office box just outside the post office. They had three openings, and one was for local mail, one was for national mail, other parts of England, and the other one was international mail, so that people could actually sort it. When I opened it, they all went into one and the same box. It was a complete waste of time having three different holes, but they all went in the same box anyway. The same with Samatha Vipassana, whatever else you were doing. It all goes in the same box. So which one should you do? Whichever one you like. Because they're all the same. They've just got different packaging. But underneath, they all taste the same. Should we do the breath? Oh, there's this one man said years ago, he never told me who his teacher was, but I really respect his teacher, because he was being taught breath meditation, and he could not watch his breath at all. He'd been doing it for months, and he could find no success. So his teacher told him, he said, look, put aside the breath meditation. Instead, I just want you to imagine watching the breath. Don't do it, but just imagine, close your eyes, imagine what it's like just to watch the breath. Okay, just imagine it for a few seconds. And then the teacher writes, what are you watching? The breath, he said. Because it was just a psychology to break his thought, his idea that he couldn't watch the breath. So just imagine you're doing it. So if any of you can't be peaceful, if you can't meditate, don't worry about that. Stop meditating, just close your eyes and imagine you're meditating. It's the same thing. It's just a psychological trick. It's true, it works. And I'll give you, a teacher has all these tricks. So for the next 9 days, I'm going to teach you exactly the same thing. However, I'm going to give it different names, come at it from different angles, and sort of say different things about it. It's all the same thing. And all it is, this is your mind. That's what meditation is, just putting it down. Whether you do that for Vipassana, Samatha, do that for Jhana, do that for walking meditation, breath meditation, whatever meditation, exactly the same. Putting it down so it can become still so you can see. Okay, so I think that's enough for tonight. So this is only the entree of this amazing 9-course meal, which is coming soon. And tomorrow on the menu for you all is super power mindfulness. I've taught about a little bit about mindfulness, but you'll be amazed at just what this mind can do when it gets empowered by deep meditation. So many of you may have seen Superman in the movies. You may have seen Spider-Man. I saw in the newspapers as I was coming here on the plane that Batman is coming soon. This is not Batman. This is Monkman. With superpower mindfulness, that the greatest superpowers alive today. That's coming soon, tomorrow, here. Okay. So, what do you do now? Say everybody, if you want to carry on meditating, you can do, but we close the gates at 10 o'clock, so those of you who are visiting here, who are sleeping outside, please make sure you get out by 10 o'clock, otherwise you're going to have to stay here till tomorrow morning. because the gates close at 10. And those of you who are staying here, you can actually go back now and have a nice rest, or you can meditate some more, but please take it easy. Don't try and prove anything. Be compassionate and kind to yourself, especially in these first few days. This is preparing yourself. Don't expect anything yet. Okay, very good.